3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Welcome everyone to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust, and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the bold, while delivering the future to healthcare's leading brands. I'm Desiree Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion, and I'm joined by Stephanie Weirwohl, EVP of Engagement, and Emily Baker, AVP of Engagement Strategy. Hi, we got the, a third of the engagement team on here.
That's right.
Hi.
That means it's going to be a fun chat. And I have to say, Des, I have to say to you, good morrow.
Yes, good morrow, Stephanie. Thank you.
Throwback to No Normal Show 2021, maybe?
Yes, whenever Chris says hello, that's my greeting. Don't know where it started from, but I'm glad the tradition carries on. And it is, it throws you off just like it. I expected. But we had a wild weekend of AI things, or a wild week. But before that, the weekend gave us the Grammys. So happy Grammy to Beyonce for getting the first finally album of the year for all those who celebrate. But did you watch? Did you catch all the things, all the performances? I think, Stephanie, you did.
I did. I was glued to it. I felt like the Grammys were back. I felt like it was a really, really good Grammy show for the first time in several years. And there was a lot of highlights. Yes, Beyonce, Chappell Roan, Doechii. That was amazing. But for me, I think the big highlight was Mother Monster is back from 2010. So Lady Gaga released her new music video. It looked like it was sponsored by MasterCard, perhaps. But anyway, Abracadabra. And I felt like I was transported back 14 years ago to the good times. So glad she's here to save us from ourselves in 2025. That was my takeaway. Emily, what about you?
I was most excited by Doechii. I love Doechii. I just think she's so creative and cool. And just like, I know she didn't win Best New Artist, but I feel like she could have won that one too. And her, like, when she got up and cried, and I was just like, you deserve everything and more, Doechii. I love her.
Yeah, a big win for all the women in music these days. And, you know, of course, we'd be remiss not to recognize the fact that Lauryn Hill was the last Black woman artist to win Album of the Year for Miss Education of Lauryn Hill, which she is still holding on to, has not put out a new album in 20 plus years. But
well, when it's perfection, you know, just stop while you're ahead.
Yes, we're waiting. I did not watch the Grammys because I, for some reason, music is where I start to feel like an old person. I'm not keeping up with the pop stars.
I feel you.
Like, I got a text from a friend that was like, oh my God, Beyonce won. And I was like, wait, are the Grammys tonight? I'm like, wow, it's happening. But I am in deep mode of preparing myself for the Oscars. That's where all of my attention is going to.
Yes. Who are you hoping wins Best Picture?
Listen, I just saw The Brutalist, and no notes, perfection, hands down, best movie I think I've ever seen on the screen in my entire life. So that's who I'm rooting for. What about you?
All 3 hours of it, Des?
Yes, they give you an intermission. They give you a 15-minute intermission, and it was amazing. I'm like, wow, why couldn't all the, like, you set the standard. Now all the other films need to do the same.
An intermission? Oh, I love that. So you can get up and get snacks?
Yes.
That's what we need.
Yes. We were in one of the first rows, so I, of course, I'm always, like, paying attention. So I was, like, the first one out of my seat to avoid the line. But, yes, 15-minute intermission was a brilliant touch to that film. Who all are you rooting for?
I think you all know mine.
Is it Wicked? Oh, well, no.
Complete unknown. But Wicked, yes, absolutely. But Complete Unknown, either one was phenomenal. I'm a Bob girl, Bob Dylan stan. But I also hope that Wicked sweeps across many categories.
I don't think I knew that about you, being a Bob Dylan stan.
Yeah.
All the love. All right. And I guess, Emily, you're rooting for Wicked, I imagine.
Yeah, I still need to see a lot of the contenders. I've been like a little bit delinquent in staying up with it. So the only one I've seen is Wicked. So by default, I'm rooting for Wicked. But I want to see Complete Unknown. I want to see The Brutalist, although I don't know if I can handle that 3 hour plus in theaters. I want to see Conclave. Is that one up for?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I haven't seen like any of these. I need to.
Yes, Conclave was great. Conclave was great. Conclave is something very different. Conclave was great. Wicked was delightful. And I do need to see A Complete Unknown. So, but
yes. But if we learned anything from the last award show, it might be Emilia Perez, because that one really, really swept. So who knows?
You know, I don't even want to get into that one. Very, very controversial takes on that film.
Yeah.
But with that, a lot of controversial takes on AI as well this past week. So let's jump into that. OpenAI just released their operator. It's debuted. The AI agents are among us. This allows AI agents to browse the web and take actions for us, such as buying groceries, booking concerts, tickets, booking a restaurant. There was a video that came out that walked through how this all takes place. But I know right now it's only offered to those that are in the, I think, $200 a month subscription, but will be made available to the rest of us soon. Operator takes over your mouse, your computer, and you can watch it browse the web, click and take actions, all of those good things. But of course, they won't make any final decisions and make any final purchases without your approval, as well as making sure that the logins are still coming from you so that it doesn't just take off. But you know, who knows? But then the very next day, Perplexity announced their AI agents, which can run on Android devices. However, this announcement gained far less press and feels a little, hey, us too, in the mix. So poor timing for them. But obviously, Stephanie, want to hear your takeaways on that.
Sure. I was really excited by this. I think, you know, we've been talking about the future of AI as agentic, and we've been talking about that on the show, and we've been talking about AI agents forever and kind of imagining what they might be. And so seeing it in real life was really, really, really cool. It felt like a really big moment to me. Now, obviously, it's not going to change the world overnight, but it gave me visions of what the world could look like. And I think I got really excited about AI agents being able to do anything and everything, whether it's as simple as a, hey, make this PowerPoint deck for me. Wouldn't that be great? Pixel push around so I don't have to do my expense reports for me. But more importantly, keep me up to date with my doctor's appointments. Manage my investment portfolio, please, on a regular basis. Thank you very much. And really anything that we can do on the web, which is everything, right? that the agents could do for us. So I was really, really excited by this and cannot wait to see it develop further.
Yes, you mentioned the doctor's appointments. That's exactly what I needed to for because I do not have my life together. And I, like, once the appointments are made, like, I keep them. But me actually taking the step to do it, not going to happen. But yeah. Emily, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm super fascinated about this and could talk about it forever. So like, cut me off when you've heard enough. But I'm so interested because when I put like my futurist hat on, I see this as only the beginning. Like if we assume that agent use becomes ubiquitous, and I think that that's a fair assumption to make given that generative AI use has become ubiquitous and like all previous iterations of the internet, like what start out as, you know, kind of niche, ultimately become the way everyone does everything. So pushing that forward with using AI agents, and you start to envision a world where the internet is actually optimized for the agent and not the human. And that's a completely different internet than we're used to. That's something that's optimized for machine readability instead of human readability. So it's just like ones and zeros, you know, everywhere. And I actually find that to be very exciting because when I continue to play that tape forward, what I envision is that the internet of today, which is, you know, trying to catch your attention in 1,000 bajillion ways, goes away. And that's scary, but I also think it has a lot of opportunity because I don't know that any of us feel like our fractured attention spans across the internet are like serving us. So it isn't to say that content creators or brands or organizations can't continue to articulate their value online, but the way that it gets to the consumer would be different. And I think that's really exciting because I think it provides an opportunity to show your value through an agentic intermediary versus trying to have to catch everyone's attention in the first 2 seconds or, you know, fill in the blank.
Emily, I love that. I'm obsessed. And I love, I mean, I definitely want to dig into the implications for marketers there, but also just for a second. So let's say you're driving down the road and, you know, I like to leverage my 15-minute commute to work to get as much done as possible. And right now that looks like audiobooks and making phone calls. But imagine it's like you talk to your car and you're like, hey, I am traveling to Italy in 3 months and I need to research my trip to Italy. And you talk to it, right? And you give it this whole just word vomit. And you're like, just make an itinerary for me and go, you know, figure out what flights you're going to book, basically be my travel agent. And by the time you arrive to work, you have this whole beautiful thing ready to go and you can just hit approve. Like, that's the kind of world that I think we're headed towards. And you could apply that to anything. You could apply that to finance. You could apply that to healthcare. You could apply that anywhere to your work. And I get super, super excited about that.
It is definitely exciting. I mean, essentially just having that personal assistant with you that's like just knocking out all of the different tasks and helping you navigate and figure out life and the things you want to achieve. But that idea of it becoming ubiquitous and that it essentially is. And I go back to the idea of when we had our Blackberries. Right. And you could access the internet on them, but it was not that great. But then, of course, when the iPhone came out and all of that just really blew out of the water, it's like now this is our present. Like, what is the future? Could I have ever imagined this back when there was an iPod? Absolutely not. So with this, it's like the world is wide open. And that's very, very exciting.
And I just think, too, like, you think about something like making a dinner reservation or a doctor's appointment. It's like there was a day, and I remember, like, you would call the restaurant to make your dinner reservation. I haven't called a restaurant in like God knows how long because there's apps for that now. And so the transition from the app-based world or, you know, the digital UX being built for humans transitioning to the digital world being built for AI and eradicating all of that like digital, you know, work that you have to do to make your dinner reservation, your doctor's appointment, your finances, whatever, is really exciting. Yeah,
it is. And so let's talk about that for a second. So from the marketer's standpoint, I'm loving what right now is, I think a lot of people are terming AEO, artificial intelligence engine optimization. But it's, as you're saying, Emily, how do we start to create websites and web content that is not just for search, but also for AI and for agents? And so I don't know who it was. I heard someone somewhere kind of tell a story about how they did a little test case and they created on their landing page some metadata that was built for the AI. So sort of for generative AI, not an agent, but Gen AI. And then kind of ran that same search in Gen AI tools and actually found it was pulling that metadata out. So that was like a very early nascent example of kind of putting something in there that humans wouldn't see, but the AI would. So I don't take that literally. And, you know, I'm not saying we should go make our websites that way, but I am saying it's a completely new mindset to your point, Emily, to say, okay, do we need all this content we're creating? And if so, what does it look like? And how would an agent navigate a health system website and review physician profiles in order to book a doctor's appointment? Because maybe that's exactly the same as a human. Right now it is in the way that OpenAI has built this, but I don't know that it will be moving forward.
No, I don't think so. And I also think that it isn't necessarily a question of do we need all of this content that we're creating, but it's more about what are the use cases that individuals will be using content? Because like, I think your example of driving in your car and you want to, you know, maybe you're listening to a summary of a meeting that happened that you put through Notebook LM and you're, you know, the world becomes more dynamic in terms of audio, video, content. And this is different from, you know, the transition to video as it exists today, where I think the internet is still very like trying to hook your eyes and your thumbs to get you to watch something and then take an action. Here, I think the content is all about what are the places in your day-to-day where you have the opportunity to consume content. And no longer do your eyes really have to be a part of it, because you can automate and verbalize so much content. So maybe there is a physician profile that's optimized for AI agents, because maybe I'm a consumer who prefers bullet points and I want to type it in and have Gemini explain to me who the doctors are and what they value. Maybe there's another set of optimized profiles that are optimized for audio and they're meant to be listened to, because maybe, Stephanie, you prefer to process information auditorily. And that's exciting, I think, as a content marketer, because it's not less important. It's more important that you understand the context in which your audiences are absorbing your content.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you're seeing a number of like AI, essentially AI bot podcasts that are popping up. But like, how can a health system use that as a way to get that information if a person's not going to just scroll through all the text? So also on the flip side of that, I know in our line of work, we're constantly thinking about behavior change. You know, how do we get, you know, the consumer, these patients to come to us, to choose us? But, you know, what if the health system was able to use this technology to create their own system for how they're able to schedule these health screenings for folks and get people in? This is especially important around like annual screenings. So, and especially for folks that are already in your system, how can you help really get folks, since they're not necessarily moving on that behavioral change thing? How do we help, you know, push that along in order to improve health for all?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to see, you know, hey, you know, charge to all of our health system friends. Who's going to be the first? And yes, I know there's going to be questions about HIPAA compliance and, you know, fears and all these issues, and those are real, and we should absolutely dig into those. But on the other side, I would say, because this is built to navigate the internet like a human, and it's sort of using the mouse, literally, it's really using websites as they're already created. Now, it does open all kinds of cans of worms, but let's go. Let's figure it out, right? Like, I think this is a really exciting opportunity that maybe doesn't require the huge digital front door overhaul that it stands in front of a lot of folks today.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. So the next big headline is that DeepSeek has disrupted the world. So essentially, there's an article about how DeepSeek is bad for Silicon Valley, but it might be great for us. So this is a Chinese AI company. They have disrupted the industry by releasing its own open source model, which is DeepSeek R1. This model offers advanced reasoning capabilities at a fraction of the cost of competitors like OpenAI and Google, especially along the subscription model. But unlike these major players who charge the subscription fee, DeepSeek provides a more affordable alternative that's free for the public to use. And it's also a model that's being pulled into some of the other platforms like Perplexity for you to be able to use as well. This development has significantly impacted major tech companies' stocks, and we've seen some of them plummet over this past week, and this is kind of an ebb and flow. And that challenges the conventional belief that building advanced AI requires billions of dollars. DeepSeek's approach is based on a relatively low cost yet powerful open weight model, and it hits at an AI future that is more accessible and possibly more innovative. But this advancement also raises concerns regarding data privacy, as you had mentioned, Stephanie, and potential surveillance, and echoing past issues with other Chinese tech companies that we just went through. But Stephanie, what's your take on all of this?
Well, this has been like the hot thing for the last week, right? Like, everyone's like, what about DeepSeek? DeepSeek. It's kind of hard to say, isn't it? all AI, I think, has naming problems. But anyway, that's another dive for another day. I think we don't know yet, right? Like, we don't know. Is it really cheaper? Is it really better? I've seen a lot of people kind of pressure testing DeepSeek versus OpenAI versus Claude versus Gemini, and sort of saying like, yeah, it's really good at some things and really bad at other things. But I think what's interesting to me, first of all, the fact that this kind of headline could essentially tank the tech sector overnight is wild, but also not too surprising. The stock market is a roller coaster. But I think it just shows like where we are in the AI game. Secondly, my rose-colored glasses take is that competition is good. And if we truly can train models for more affordable costs, that's actually showing a lot of progress. And even if R1 isn't cheaper and isn't better, it at least puts it out there in the universe, which is, hey, do we need $500 billion infrastructure investment? Do we need to be pouring all this money in, or is there another way? And I think that's just the way that tech goes, is as you mature, you find cheaper ways to produce, which then creates more democratization for everyone. So I don't think we're there yet. We're probably not. I think I'm willing to say we're not there yet, but at least that conversation is good and it's important. And then, hey, it'll supercharge the global competition as well. So that's my take. I don't know if either of you all have a less rose-colored glasses take on this.
I agree with your take. I do think competition is largely good. I guess mine is a little bit more of a skeptical take, in that I am skeptical that it was as cheap to develop as they're saying, because my understanding is the information that they released is like at the end of the development process. So we don't have a sense of what it took to ramp up to what they released last week or 2 weeks ago. So there's that. I am skeptical that it was as cheap as it is indicated to be. Second, and I guess this isn't skeptical, and this is more aligned with what you were saying, you know, does it give echoes of sort of like the dot-com bubble of right now? A lot of AI startups are really overinflated, overinvested. Do they all need that much money? And is it a bad thing if some of them are culled as the, you know, winners sort of rise to the top? But then my third and final point, which I think is a little bit more skeptical, is related to sort of the like geopolitical concerns around DeepSeek. You're right. It is hard to say. And I am in no way like a geopolitical expert, but I know that there are a lot of questions around the Chinese technology and what it is learning or taking from use cases around the world. And I think that's just another element to be mindful of.
Yeah, that's a great question around like what is actually being kind of harvested to create this. But then I'm also reminded that whenever I go to other countries, it feels so much more technologically advanced. Yes. Just the infrastructure of the cities alone. So, I mean, not that I'm saying any of this is like propaganda that, you know, the United States are always the first and foremost. We do have the most open system of being able to create compared to other countries. However, I'd be remiss in thinking that other countries did not come up with more technological advances than us. But let the arms race continue.
Yes, I got to double down on that, because I think, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, since the early 2010s, China has been far ahead of the U.S. in terms of just the adoption of tech and the way of even social media use. Like, I always look at WeChat as 10 years ago, WeChat was embedded in everything in China, from payment methods, you know, to shopping and beyond. And here in the U.S., our you know, social media companies like Meta have just been trying to replicate that and struggling. And I have to reference, there's a book from 2018 that I read back then. That was 6 years ago. Goodness. Called AI Superpowers, China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order by Dr. Kai-Fu Lee. And every time I mention him, I have to give a shout out. He went to my high school, so I have a little bit of extra love for Dr. Kai-Fu Lee. But he said in that book that the U.S. would lead breakthroughs, but that China would be better and faster in engineering. And it was a whole thesis on how you should look to China when you think about the AI race. And here we are, 6 years later. Again, I'm not saying DeepSeek is the be-all, end-all forever, but it is an important moment in this story.
It is. And I guess I keep thinking about like how, like we were saying earlier about not knowing exactly the beginning, the some of the documentation started to come out later. But how much are we able to just kind of continue to keep an eye on this information that's coming out so that we are just abreast of what the globe is doing? And I think that's something that'll be more of a personal charge. But all of this brings us to our spotlight discussion. And that is essentially where we are, the AI era, and that this essentially is the golden age of healthcare marketing. We recently just put out a blog that's kind of going all in on this, and that essentially how AI obviously has changed the game, but this is only the beginning. Curious. Some of these items, you know, we're looking at the AI-driven marketing. This is, as we said, ubiquitous. It's essential. It's embedded in all the things, all of our devices. I just got, a couple months ago, got the new iPhone. It's built into that. My new MacBook, it's built into that. It's just going to become part of our everyday life. But curious, Emily, your thoughts on all of this?
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. I mean, there's sort of two ways that I am thinking about the golden age of healthcare marketing. And I guess I think the golden age of marketing, but why I think it's so relevant to healthcare marketers and healthcare audiences is healthcare is such a personal topic, right? So yes, personalized marketing has been, you know, the buzzword for who knows how long, but it's a very different understanding of personalized when you think about like selling sneakers versus like your healthcare marketing. So I think on the one hand, AI provides you the ability to do more faster, which is exciting when you think about versioning and personalization. In terms of what's possible to reach so many segments of your audiences exactly where they are, circling back to what I was saying earlier, do you have audiences that would prefer to read the information? Do you have audiences that would prefer to listen or watch? Do you have audiences that would prefer you offer that they come to your facility and speak with them directly, which you might have time for if AI, you know, allows us to maximize and make our days more efficient, right? Then on the other side, I think is the big sort of nebulous creativity discussion, which is that AI can really help you be more creative and brilliant in the work that you're creating. And there are a lot of different ways I think it can help you do that. But I'm interested in, Stephanie, your thoughts before we dive in there.
Well, I kind of want to dive in there, actually, because that's what I think that's what is left out of a lot of the conversations. And yes, I love the idea of AI as a task assistant. Y'all know that. I'm preaching that every single day of how do we leverage generative AI tools to do the mundane tasks for us. That is the number one conversation happening right now in marketing. The conversation not happening is actually what you just set up, Emily, and what I think this blog post goes into a little bit, which is, how can we use it to be more creatively brilliant? How can we use it to do things that have never been done before? So here's a really stupid example. Let's say we wanted to shoot a TV spot on the moon. We can't. Well, with AI, you could do that, right? Stupid example. And I think the point there is, so far all we've seen in the video realm is like the Coca-Cola commercial, which has its pros and its cons and created a lot of controversy. And it's basically recreating something that they could have created anyway, but doing it faster and you know, maybe more efficiently. The question I pose is, what are the amazing ideas that have never actually even been thought of that either generative AI could help us get to because it helps us get there faster, or because it can curate and collate data in a much bigger way than we've ever been able to do before, or because it can help us produce something? Maybe it's an experience, maybe it's not video. And I don't know what those are. And I think that's what's exciting. And that's the conversation that I think we should be having more often as marketers, because it doesn't erase humans from the mix. It elevates humans.
Yeah, it reminds me of what it puts more of these tools in our hands, right? You know, 10, 20 years ago, even shooting a video, you had to have like an insane camera that you knew how to operate and then drag that footage onto an edit bay and edit all this stuff. Then the cell phone, smartphone allowed us to be able to just do that right from our fingertips. So it's really going to be leaps and bounds what we're able to do from this standpoint. Imagine up. I know a lot of creatives feel like it takes away from the craft of art and creativity, whereas another camp, folks like us, feel like it boosts creativity. But I guess the question is, of course, depending on what you're inputting into it, you know, are you going to get the sea of sameness, or are you going to get creativity? And it's all going to be about how much information you give it, how you're able to prompt it to, you know, take you to that next level of creation. But yeah, it's exciting to see what's possible in our hands, and we can do it ourselves.
Yeah, and I want to add to that because I think, you know, I know we have several episodes in the pipeline. One of them, which Chris had mentioned last time, that we want to do, which is a debate on whether AI will take jobs or not. I'll throw in there, we should also have a debate about this topic. And, you know, have creative folks take sides. I think that'd be really interesting. But one note is back to that Coca-Cola holiday commercial. It took a huge team of people, really brilliant, incredible, smart, creative people to pull that off. The point is, yes, it allows us to do things faster, but it right now, I'm going to say right now, it's not pushing the creatives out of the mix. It's actually, you know, bringing them in and just using the skills differently. Emily, I know you have a really hot take about this, so I want to hear your take.
Yeah, I honestly don't know which hot take you're referring to, but I do all have one all hot take. So, well, one of my hot takes is that I completely agree with you in that, you know, these tools aren't yet capable of running solo. So you are still, your output is as creative as you are. And so that is one of my hot takes, which is, y'all, we put out bad creative now. I mean, not us, not BPD, but the world of marketers at large. Like, are you telling me that everything a human created is brilliant? Absolutely not. So what is different about the fact that I'm using an AI tool versus Des, your point of like, oh, now we have smartphones that change the way we shoot video. Like, it's only elevating the brilliance that you have and the insights that you're developing and coaching it and prompting it to help you build something great. And if you're not willing to do that, then yeah, maybe the work isn't going to be that creative. But like, would it have been in the first place? And then my other hot take, this one I think is a little less hot, a little less spicy, is just that, you know, it's less about will AI make us more or less creative or what impact will AI have on creativity? But it's more about how might AI change creativity or allow us to be more creative. And for me, one of the things that I think is so interesting, and I've talked about this a lot, is the way that because AI tools, generative AI, are basically like aliens from outer space and have no context about the world that we live in, you have to explain everything to them. And as marketers, I think we so often live in such a context-heavy world that we, you know, cut ideas off at the pass before we even consciously allow ourselves to consider them, because we know that this individual isn't going to like that, or this type of style just isn't ever going to fly. So we close ourselves off and we don't even know that we're doing it. But because we have to explain the work that we're doing or the organization that we're marketing on behalf of at such a granular and like elementary to an alien level, it just sort of, to me, unlocks a lot of really interesting things. And I think that's what human creatives do really well, is that they're able to see, you know, take a chessboard and see it for its individual atoms and its cohesive whole. And they're able to know, like, if I amp up this element or that element, I can create something really new and brilliant. And I think AI just allows us to come at that in a different way. Not a better or a worse way, just different.
That context that you mentioned about having to give more of that to our AI alien, right? So going back to the film I mentioned earlier that I'm obsessed with after watching The Brutalist. If you remember during the Golden Globes, the director, Brady Corbett, when he was accepting his award, talked so much about the auteur of creating a film and that all of the design, choices, the filming choices, the fact that they shot on film, that these every element of that film was intentional and was getting back into that idea of like dreaming up a world, but like creating it with even using the old school tools, because using film to produce this. And so this was a $10 million budget film. To watch it, you would never believe it, because it is incredibly beautiful. But they did use AI. What did they use AI for? It was for the adjusting the Hungarian accent that Adrien Brody had in the film. They used this tool called Respeecher. And essentially to give it that actual authentic feel, because of course it's one of the hardest language to really, especially if you're coming from an Anglo-Saxon background, it's one of the harder dialects to really capture authentically. So they took his voice through and just fixed a few things when he was speaking Hungarian, not English, to adjust the accent. And then, yes, at the end, there was a little bit of generative AI. They used Midjourney for the final sequence of the film when they were essentially, they created a couple of different renderings of different types of architecture and the buildings that the architect in the film feature would have done. But there is something that I'm really loving about the idea of marrying the two worlds, where you've got the true art form of film, but then you're also just making sure that you are providing the most authentic piece of it through just adjustments, as he did for the accent. But curious anyone's thoughts on that.
I love that. I think that's such a great example of, you know, back to the right now, the billion-dollar question is, what are humans best at that humans can lean into, and where can we leverage AI and all the tech in the places to make us even better? I think that's the key question that we're all trying to answer. And if I'll just add to that, I mean, I think that the most interesting work I'm seeing that's coming out with AI, to your point, Des, like the film you just shared, I'm seeing it in my LinkedIn feeds from the most brilliant creative directors that are already amazing creative directors, right? They're the ones that are putting out the really interesting, short films I'm seeing digitally. If I try right now with the current state of the tools, it's not working. Now, will it in the future? I think what's exciting is it can democratize creativity. And the iPhone did that, to your point, Emily. And I think that AI will be able to democratize creativity, but it will also allow the most brilliant minds to level up even more. So just one quick example, I've always wanted to be a songwriter and it's just never been my thing. And I use my robot friend I've been using my robot friend to write songs for some time now. And only recently did I actually land on one that was actually good, because I think the tech has increased. And it was an amazing feeling. Like, it was a really awesome feeling to be like, me, who is not a songwriter, was able to create something that I was really proud of and that was really emotional, because it democratized that creativity. It doesn't mean that the greatest songwriters out there are not as valuable at all, in the same way that the iPhone didn't mean that the greatest videographers were not as valuable. So, you know, I guess that's the way that I would sort of justify both sides.
No, well, now I'm kind of curious, like, what was your process? Like, I know you're a pianist. Did you use it primarily for the lyrics or?
Yeah, for the lyrics. I did the music myself, but the lyrics is what I've never been able to nail. And, you know, I went through the process of, let's start with, you know, here's my general direction and here's the meter that I want. And, you know, here's kind of the topic and let's brainstorm topics. And I did it on a plane. So the whole thing took maybe less than 30 minutes. And we landed in a really beautiful place. And no, I'm not going to play that for anybody. But for me, it gave me a sense of joy that I've been trying to reach my whole life. And I'm not a songwriter. I want to put that out there. And I'm not, this doesn't make me one. It just gave me a sense of my own little private creative joy.
But what if it does? So I going back to the 70s when the synthesizer first came on to the theme. And a lot of musicians and artists were like I remember Queen, my favorite band in the world. They had put out an album. It was the, it was the Day at the Symphony album. And they always put a liner notes about like no synthesizers. Well, then the 80s came and those albums were all synthesizers, right? And then you get to the early rap scene, and the reason why the Dr. Dre's of the world are major players in the game of music. And it's because they were able to harness technology to create and generate and even twist some of the existing music to create more. And then you get into electronic dance music where, you know, you're not using instruments anymore. You're generating sound, you know, through these systems. So it's a piece of this. It's just, this is a part of our evolution in every factor of our lives and creativity. And people, of course, when they've, it always first comes out, like you saw with Queen, people are going to say, no, you can't do that. That's cheating. And just like with this film, there was all of this conversation around, can this film actually be up for an Academy Award because they use pieces of AI? And I'm like, honey, we're in Hollywood. Everything is edited and created out of thin air. So yes, why can't this be a part of it? But yeah, it's a very, very exciting time.
I totally agree. And I think it's so exciting because, to your point, Stephanie, like the creation of the iPhone didn't make skilled videographers less important, but it created a new skill that the best videographers needed to adopt.
Yes.
And I think it's natural that when new technology comes out, I think scarcity mindset, which I love that premise around is what I do at risk. And I have spent X amount of years and X amount of hours developing expertise in this area. And is that at risk? But I think with that abundance mindset, it absolutely doesn't. It just gives you more. And I think what you see in like music or film, it's never or rarely is it the person who jumps out of the gate with the new technology who goes on to create something truly brilliant. It's the people who bring with them the context of what came before and how things used to be made and what you wanted to do or didn't want to do because of those factors, and then layers on top new technologies to build something really, really beautiful. Like you talk about Queen does, and it made me think of like David Byrne of the Talking Heads, I think is another great example, who has so much musical knowledge but continues to stay modern and continues to create with what's, new and available to him. And I think that's very inspiring.
Mic drop, Emily. And look at you. You're channeling Jason Brown, BPD CEO, with that abundance mindset. I love that.
Me too.
Shout out.
All right. So, I mean, essentially it feels like the key takeaway here is, you know, keep exploring, keep dreaming, keep creating, and, you know, chase your wildest dreams of becoming a songwriter. And I feel like a history professor. I'm always like bringing up this old stuff to like give context for the new. But with all of that, for all of you listening, be sure to subscribe to our newsletter, the No Normal Rewind, which goes even deeper into our discussions you hear here on the No Normal Show. And we want to hear from you. So shoot us an email at nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com so that your question may be featured in our next episode. And make sure to share the show with your friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating on iTunes and Spotify, preferably 5 stars. All of that would be greatly appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and we'll talk to you next week. 3, 2, 1.